This is the Friday Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Friday, January the 19th. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. Also happy to have with us two guests from different political perspectives joining this hour to discuss and debate with you the big political news of the week. Today, Jim Miller and Tony Palmieri will talk about the latest news about Iraq, about the presidential race, what's going on in Congress and at the state capitol, and whatever else you want to talk about. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Let me welcome in our Week in Reviewers for this week. Jim Miller, president of the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good to be with you, Joy.
Thanks for joining us. And Tony Palmieri, an associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, a former Green Party candidate for the state legislature, media columnist for The Valley Scene, the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper. He joins us by phone as well. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Let's start with this story on the wire this morning. Support is building among congressional Democrats for a resolution putting them on record as opposing President Bush's plan to send more troops to Iraq. With two Senate Republicans already on board, others are giving it serious consideration. Speaker Nancy Pelosi says House Democrats will back the resolution, which declares the president's decision to increase troop levels by more than 21,000 is, quote, not in the national interest. The Congress is going to take this resolution up next week after President Bush's State of the Union address on Tuesday night. So what do you think of that, Jim Miller? Is that a good thing to be voting on?
Well, I mean, you can vote on whatever you like, but my understanding from listening to Joe Biden last night was that that's a non-binding resolution.
Right.
So basically, what it just says that Congress doesn't necessarily agree with them. One of the things that strikes me about that we really need an Iraqi policy on, we sort of know what the president wants to do. I think it would be very refreshing for the Democrats to lay out exactly what they want to do there over the next several months now that they control Congress. I mean, you know, if they don't want troops there or they want to cut back, fine. What are they going to do there long term?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the issues that has to be debated. But, I mean, you know, if Congress wants to have a non-binding resolution on this, fine. How does that impact on what's going to happen?
You don't see any harm in...
I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. I'm just saying I don't know that it does anything. And, I mean, I think the Democrats have to stop posturing. The election's over. They got to tell the country what they want to do and what direction they think we should be going in Iraq.
Yeah. Do you think the same thing, Tony Palmieri?
The president's already said he's going to ignore any such resolution, so it makes for some good political theater, but it's not going to have an impact. There's a much stronger resolution in the House of Representatives sponsored by Congresswoman Barbara Lee from California that would ask for a withdrawal within 6 months, but I don't suspect that most of the Democrats will get behind that one. So symbolic resolutions, feel-good resolutions are fine, but they're not really going to help end the war when the president has said he will ignore them. When they start hitting on the purse strings, then we can talk. But there are very few Democrats, except for Senator Feingold and a few others, are talking about that.
Yeah. Do you? What about Senators Clinton and Obama, who are now both apparently proposing a cap on troops with an eventual withdrawal?
That sounds like 2008 presidential politics. Hillary Clinton has been very disappointing on this war from 2003, and in fact, in some sense, she's been more hawkish than President Bush, if that's possible. Barack Obama, I think, understands that the majority of the population are against the war, and he's certainly looking for a way to position himself as being an anti-war senator. But I think right now, and I agree with Jim on this, there's a lot of politics going on, and I think especially presidential politics and congressional politics for 2008.
Yeah.
I'd like to add one thing, and I agree with Tony on this. This may be a bad show for you this week, Joy. I guarantee you that Hillary Clinton and Obama are running polls daily on what they should be doing in Iraq. I don't think you're going to see anything coming out that can penalize them potentially in 2008.
I think political theater is the best way of describing this.
Yeah, we're losing you a little bit. It's getting muffled, Jim Miller, maybe because the receiver's, you know, going away from your mouth. So we, let me play, this is another item that made the news this week. It's Barack Obama on his website announcing he has formed an exploratory committee.
For the next several weeks, I'm going to talk with people from around the country, listening and learning more about the challenges we face as a nation, the opportunities that lie before us, and the role that a presidential campaign might play in bringing our country together. And on February 10th, at the end of these discussions, and in my home state of Illinois, I'll share my plans with my friends, neighbors, and fellow Americans.
Yeah, is that, what's that going to do to the presidential race, Tony Palmieri?
Barack is an attractive candidate. He's an intelligent man. He's eloquent. He talks about grand themes like hope. Everyone likes hope. But I think over the next few weeks and months, when we start learning more about his positions, perhaps the mass media will start to lose their infatuation with him, because I don't think he's going to be handed the Democratic nomination easily. There's some stiff competition there. And, of course, Hillary Clinton is a great fundraiser, and money counts for a lot in presidential politics, and she's got tons of it. But no one should underestimate Barack Obama. He's got a compelling personal narrative. He's smart. And this 2008 would probably be the best year for him, because there is no incumbent, and Hillary Clinton will be a lightning rod. So I think he and his advisors have probably calculated that if he is going to be president, 2008 might be the best year, and they don't want to blow the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on Barack Obama, presidential candidate, Jim Miller?
Well, there are probably about another 12 or 13 people out there you might want to also talk about. He clearly is a front runner. I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's any question about that. Again, Tony and I are agreeing on this. He's going to have to be vented by the media for the next year and a half. We don't know a lot about him, and we don't know what he's done in the past. And that's something that most candidates don't quite understand when they get into a presidential run, that things that they may have ignored in the past can come back to haunt them. We don't know a lot about him. So that's one of the things that, you know, we're going to have to pay attention to. But I wouldn't underestimate him. He is very good. He is personable. He's got a certain kind of energy that maybe Hillary Clinton doesn't have. He's got a major shot. There's no question about that. He has a compelling story. And maybe one of the things, you know, everybody keeps saying, well, he doesn't have an experience. In over 200 years, this country has elected two sitting senators. And what do we have now, about 10 thinking about running for president? Not having experience in the Senate might not be the worst thing in the world.
Let me ask you both about another headline this morning. Iraq's prime minister is blaming the security crisis in his country on the Americans. Prime Minister Maliki says Iraqi forces would have had better control over their country if the U.S. had equipped them with better weapons and more of them. He also was very critical of President Bush and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. For comments like Secretary Rice's comments that the Maliki government is on borrowed time, saying that comments like that will embolden the terrorists and, you know, are not helpful at all to his government's efforts here. Maliki is firing back at President Bush. What does that mean, Tony Palmieri?
All politics is local. For an Iraqi prime minister to sound even remotely favorable toward the American president could be almost literally suicidal for him. The American occupation is very unpopular in Iraq. There have been all kinds of surveys done out there. The Iraqi population at large is not in approval of our presence there. And so the prime minister has to reflect that. Let's face it, the majority of the American population is profoundly against not just the so-called surgeon troops, but the presence of troops that we have there now. And it seems like the only person in the country who supports this policy right now is the president himself.
Yeah. Jim Miller?
I almost have to agree with everything Tony said. What's going on in Iraq with Maliki, I think it's pretty obvious. It's the old line about you dance with the people that brought you. I mean, this is George Bush's guy. I don't think he's going to have a shot to replace him with somebody else over the next year. Realistically, he doesn't have 2 years. He has, at best, a year on Iraq. Because once you get into the presidential cycle, no one's going to basically much care what he says when he's a lame duck. He will still be commander-in-chief, but it all comes down to how Maliki handles this over the next 6 months to a year on whether there's any going to be improvement in Iraq. I don't think anybody knows that right now.
We'll see if we can fire up a little disagreement between our guests after we take a short pause. Jim Miller, president of the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, and Tony Palmieri, associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, talking with us about the major news of the week. It's our Friday Week in Review, and we'll get to your calls coming up after this short pause. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll join Ben Marins or stay with us all day at Issue with Ben Marins after 4 o'clock this afternoon. Ben will be hosting Your Views on the News when you can call in and talk about your choice for the week's most significant news item. Your Views on the News after 4 o'clock. It's our Friday Week in Review when we talk with two guests from different perspectives about the news of the week. Today we have Jim Miller and Tony Palmieri with us. And our first caller is Rick in East Troy. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello there.
Hi.
I guess the news I'm curious about is the lack of comment or follow-up on either side of the issue of when the president made his speech, he said that Iraq would be doing this or doing that, they will be following through on their responsibilities. And I was waiting for the or else. And I haven't heard anybody commenting on that at all, except I believe the defense secretary said something that we would have to review the policy if Iraq didn't hold up their end of the bargain. And I'd like your guest's comment on that.
Yeah, what is the or else, Jim Miller?
Well, I mean, I go back to something I just said. I mean, I think if Maliki does not get control on Baghdad, I think that that will be Bush's cue to leave or to begin to start a policy of leaving.
Yeah, and then say it's all Maliki's fault?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think you're going to see the United States backing another prime minister. I mean, there's no time for this. It has to be done over the next 6 months or a year. And I think, Bush will start a process of getting us out of there if he doesn't think Maliki can cut it. And, I mean, you know, candidly, in some respects, Maliki's remarks are helpful to Bush because it gives him a rationale for getting out. This is not dissimilar to what happened in some respects 40 years ago in Vietnam, to the point where George Bush isn't going to dissolve Iraq. The next president is.
Yeah. Tony Palmieri?
I can't imagine George Bush pursuing any kind of withdrawal strategy while he's in office. And Rick makes a good point. There is no or else. I think what's been happening in the last 5 or 6 months is that the president is searching for some kind of rhetorical posture that will pacify the American public, and nothing is working. I mean, nothing short of a withdrawal, at least a phased withdrawal of troops, will work, and he's not ready to do that. And I can't see that he will do that before his term is up, absent massive, large-scale public opposition to the war. And, you know, there is a demonstration coming up in Washington in late January, later this month, and let's see if he listens to that.
I'm going to do a disagreement time, Joy.
Oh, there we go.
I think George Bush will definitely be looking within a year to do something in Iraq that's different. In a phased-down withdrawal, serves his best interest. Because in the last year of his presidency, he's not going to be thinking necessarily about 2008. He's going to be thinking about 3008 and what his legacy is. And I don't know if he's got a legacy, but certainly he's going to want to have something to do with trying to solve the Iraq problem, even if it means getting out. I don't think he's going to be saying at the end of 2008, no matter what happens, we have to stay.
Yeah,
I think that'll change.
Yeah. You know, what about all these Republican defections and public opposition from some pretty prominent Republicans? We hear some reference that back in Vietnam, it took some Republicans to go in into Nixon and twist arms. Do you see anything like that possibly happening with the current administration, Tony Palmieri?
If the president does start some kind of withdrawal before his term is up, it will be just for that reason, Joy, to assist Republicans. The Republicans saw what happened in November of 2006. They realize now that there is no such thing as a safe seat, and they desperately want the president to come up with some plan there that works. I think the president would have been smart 2 years ago to announce that we won in Iraq, we deposed Saddam Hussein, they had elections, we won, and now let's leave. He chose not to do that, and now he and the Republicans are paying the consequences for this dearly. I do think if he does announce any kind of withdrawal plan, it will be solely to help Republicans in 2008.
Anything further, Jim Miller?
Well, first of all, yeah, the senator who made that comment was actually a Republican from Vermont. But, I mean, this is different. I don't agree with what you just said, Joy, about, you know, pressure being put on Nixon. Vietnam wasn't Nixon's war. It was Johnson's and the Democrats' war. And he was the president who came in after Johnson and who eventually got us out of there, which is what's likely to happen with Iraq. But the difference was Nixon had politics going for him. He ended the draft, which cut into the opposition to the war. The problem in Iraq is there's no simple solution. And then you've got the second problem lying out there that people like McCain have talked about. If we get out of Iraq, what do we do about terrorism? That's the second part of this problem in Iraq that no one's ever talked about. Certainly none of the people in Congress are talking about it. What exactly do you do with terrorism?
Yeah, I know.
If we get out of Iraq, we can start fighting terrorism. I mean, that's what Feingold and others have been saying, that Iraq has been a great distraction from the terrorist fight. It's used up billions of dollars in resources. It's clear that the Iraqis don't want us there. Afghanistan is once again suffering greatly. So this has been really a distraction from the war on terror.
Yeah, we heard Hillary Clinton say we need to build up those troops in Afghanistan and start fighting the Taliban more, Jim Miller.
Yeah, but the terrorism is not located in one country. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you know, one of the views, rightly or wrongly, on the Republican side with people like McCain is that if you don't fight it in Iraq, where are you going to fight it? Seattle, New York City? I mean, it's not like this isn't like Vietnam, where after the Vietnam War, we didn't have to worry about the Viet Cong invading California. Here, can we actually be sure that terrorists aren't going to go after Americans in America?
Let me take another caller. Steve in Oshkosh. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I wonder if you could comment on the testimony this week of four retired generals before the Senate and the chilling consensus that an attack on Iran seems more likely rather than less likely. And specifically, what would the guests do in response to a Bush-led attack on Iran? I feel like, as one opposed to the Iraq war, it's time for massive civil disobedience and cutting off the tax dollars and perhaps attacking military installations in this country. I think something has to be done.
Are you worried about a possible attack on Iran, thinking that's going to happen, Tony Palmieri?
If any president would do it, it would be the one that we have right now. And, That would really be time for the politicians, the Democrats in Congress especially, to step up to the plate and not give the president the kind of blanket or blank check they gave him for Iraq back in 2003. So, I mean, Steve is right. There's a real possibility of an invasion of Iran. And, citizens need to be ready to stand up to that, and so do the politicians.
Jim Miller?
I don't think there's the slightest chance in the world that the United States is going to attack Iran. I think it's rhetoric. I think it's political positioning. In fact, there's a news report out in the last 2 days that the president of Iran is being silenced by the people who actually run the country. But more to the point, I found what the last person calling in said was a little chilling. They want to attack American military bases in this country for civil disobedience. What's that about? I got to tell you, if the Democrats ever start talking like that, they won't have to worry about holding Congress for much longer. I don't think there's a big feeling in this country that the military is an institution that's disliked the way it may have been in Vietnam. In fact, just the opposite. America has shown that they are very much behind their soldiers in Iraq.
And that is one of the reasons why Americans want to see a withdrawal from Iraq. I mean, I think Americans are appalled at what's happening to the all-volunteer force The volunteer force was never supposed to be used as kind of like chess pieces by a president that wants to go in any part of the world he feels like. And I think people are getting increasingly frustrated with this kind of abuse of the military. And but I agree with Jim. I don't think we're going to be seeing attacks on military installations by civil disobedience.
But, you know, I have to disagree with what Tony just said, though. The fact of the matter is, whether you like George Bush or not, he's commander-in-chief, and we have a military to basically carry out missions, American view of the world. Rightly or wrongly, he has the right, as commander-in-chief, to do what he wants. It's up to Congress to disagree with him and for Congress to hold him in check. But he is commander-in-chief, and the military is there to serve the country.
Well, I'm going to be the conservative one here, Jim, and believe we ought to go back to the U.S. Constitution, which says that the Congress declares war. And this Congress has not declared war since World War II, I believe, and they've
yes, that is also correct, which gets back to Vietnam.
We have allowed the executive branch in this country way, way too much war-making power, and we are paying the consequences for it now in Iraq, tragically.
But, yeah, in all seriousness, I mean, that's why, you know, I said before, it's up to the Democrats in Congress to basically begin to define what they want to do about Iraq and not pass 9 bonding resolutions.
Yeah. And Tony Palmieri, you don't expect the Democrats to vote to defund the war?
I don't expect them to do that. I think they should do that. I applaud Senator Feingold and others for going in that direction. The only scenario in which I could see them doing that is if the situation in Iraq gets substantially worse than it is now, which is entirely possible. Yeah. But I don't see it at this point.
And you don't either, Jim Miller?
No, only because they're desperate to hold on to their gains for 2008. And you know, candidly, what they're looking to do, as most politicians, is to get reelected and hope that they can win the presidency in 2008.
Okay, I'm going to take another call. I go to Dave in Menominee. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you. Mm-hmm. While we're bogged down in the Middle East and Iran is posturing itself. On January 11th, China successfully shot down a satellite to send a message because Bush is trying to weaponize space offensively and defensively. And I'd like to get your guests' thoughts on everybody's posturing because we're bogged down.
Yeah, I do know anything about this, Jim Miller?
No, but I mean, the point is well taken. Mm-hmm. We are bogged down, and you know, a country like China is certainly economically in this century going to be a superpower. I think the fact of life are is that China will be very much either a rival or a friendly competitor of us for the next 100 years, mm-hmm. And so I see no reason why they wouldn't take an opportunity to do what's in their best interest.
Yeah, it says, I do have, Leo found some response to that from National Security Spokesman Gordon John Drow, saying the United States believes China's development and testing of such weapons is inconsistent with the spirit of cooperation that both countries aspire to in the civil space area. But I don't know much else beyond that. What about you, Tony Palmieri?
Yeah, I think for an administration that's pursued a preemptive war strategy with disastrous consequences, they just don't have any global authority anymore. I mean, when the Bush administration makes comments against any country, the rest of the world just doesn't listen. And you know, I'll give George W. Bush credit for one thing. He's put foreign policy back on the map in U.S. politics. We thought after the end of Cold War we were going to have a generation of domestic policy being solely on the map, but he's put it back into foreign policy, and he's demonstrated he can't do it very effectively. So, yeah, the next president's going to have to deal with a variety of places in the world, including China.
Let me ask you first, Tony Palmieri, and then Jim Miller. I talked with a guest earlier this week from the conservative media watchdog group, Media Research Center, who was complaining about the way the mainstream, especially the broadcast television broadcast news channels, are treating this whole issue with the President Bush's plan to escalate troops in Iraq, and just saying that it was a biased coverage and against the plan even before it was officially announced, and that it's unfair the way the media are covering this issue. You're in the media, Tony Palmieri. What do you think of the media coverage?
I think we ought to look at the Iraq Study Group. That was the bipartisan group that President Bush has ignored. A major part of their study claimed that the national media in the United States, if anything, has been minimizing the tragedy of this policy in Iraq, that they've minimized the violence, they've minimized the chaos, and I don't think their coverage of the surge has been especially unfair to the president. I think, in fact, they've been going out of their way to almost beg the president to state his case. So the idea that they've been unfair to the president, I find kind of bizarre.
Yeah. Jim Miller?
Well, I don't agree with that. I think that, rightly or wrongly, that the White House believes that the media in this country is definitely biased, total liberal bent. I think most conservatives believe that. I believe it. I think that, you know, they basically don't particularly care for George Bush and not ever going to go out of their way to help him. And candidly, the media, especially the print media, has to create stories. You know, the print media in this country has changed in the last 20 or 30 years where they can't break news anymore. That's done electronically. So they have to basically try and analyze news and come up with stories that, you know, that are different than what's already been broken. And I think that, you know, Bush's position would be that they basically have not been helpful to him on his views in Iraq, for rightly or wrongly. I'm not saying whether that's true, but that's certainly a position that a lot of people have.
I think it's now a consensus, Jim, that the national media helped the president in the drumbeat to war back in 2003.
A consensus of who?
Liberals and conservatives alike. There seems to be a great deal of agreement now that the New York Times and the Washington Post ended up apologizing for their coverage of Iraq before the invasion in 2003. They didn't ask enough critical questions. They gave the president a free ride. If they are being more critical now of the surge, that's good. Maybe they're trying not to repeat their mistake.
They're overcompensating.
I don't agree with that.
We will go to another issue. Another caller, Dave in Wanakee. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Earlier you were discussing the Constitution, and in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings with our Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, first I'll quote the Constitution, Article 1, Section 9. The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless, when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Here's an exchange between Arlen Specter and Alberto Gonzalez where they were discussing habeas corpus. Specter, wait a minute. The Constitution says you can't take away habeas corpus except in the cases of invasion or rebellion, doesn't that mean you have the right of habeas corpus? Gonzalez, I meant that the comment that the Constitution doesn't say every individual in the United States or every citizen has or is assured the right of habeas corpus, it doesn't say that. It says that the right of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. Gonzalez said that individuals do not have the right of habeas corpus. Should Alberto Gonzalez be impeached?
Well, I don't know if that's possible, but Tony Palmieri, you want to start?
I think we saw the administration yesterday backpedal on the surveillance program. Mm-hmm. They now are claiming that they'll go through the foreign intelligence, the FISA court, which is really all the senators, Republican and Democrat alike, were asking for years. And again, they saw the results of the election in November, and they're backpedaling on something like the writ of habeas corpus. I think Alberto Gonzalez has been shameful on this, and I do think it's time, now that the Democrats have the majority, to really grill the Attorney General and to make sure that the Bill of Rights in this country are protected and not taken away in the name of a war that has been ill-defined and fought incompetently by the current administration.
Mm-hmm. Jim Miller?
Well, first of all, this is what happens when you lose elections. You have different chairmen and committees deciding, you know, what the testimony is going to look like. But, I mean, I think one of the views, rightly or wrongly, that Gonzalez and probably Bush have is that they don't necessarily believe that terrorism falls under the specific legal definition that we've had in the past. I mean, you know, when people come in, fly planes into the World Trade Center, and you have that kind of a war going on, what does that mean? Who do you basically protect yourself from? It's not the old days where it would be countries. These people don't necessarily live in any country. They can live in caves anywhere. And so I think one of the views that they have, rightly or wrongly, is that they're trying to protect the United States from people who may live here or be here who want to do something about spreading terrorism.
What about the administration yesterday saying that we'll get warrants before we wiretap Jim Miller?
Well, I mean, legally, that's what you should be doing. I mean, wiretaps, I think, are a little bit different than... The warrant, they've got to have some kind of protection for the average American. I don't disagree with that. But, I mean, on the other hand, you know, the war on terrorism, that isn't going away. For some reason, you know, one of the things that has been blighted on Iraq, and maybe the Democrats are right on this, a lot of people in this country don't necessarily think that we're ever going to be attacked again. I don't agree with that. And I don't think this present administration believes it. And I'm not so sure any of the Democrats running for president are going to believe that either. The question is simply, for a lot of people, is like not when, if, but when.
We're going to take a short pause and then move on to some other issues, probably talk about some issues going on in the state of Wisconsin and anything else you want to talk about. But we spent most of the time now on some on Iraq and other national issues. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review with Jim Miller, the president of the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, and Tony Palmieri, associate professor of communications at UW Oshkosh. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Week in Review. If you stay tuned after 9 o'clock, you'll join Kathleen Dunn. Kathleen will talk with the author of Arabesque. Or no, wait a minute. That's the wrong program note. I apologize. She will be talking with a professor of history and political science about what authority Congress has over foreign and military policy. They'll talk about the relationship between Congress and the executive branch after 9 o'clock. We're talking with Jim Miller and Tony Palmieri about the news of the week. And let's talk about some state and local issues that have a statewide interest, I think. The city of Madison this week decided to... authorize city officials and other appointed officials when they take the oath of office, when you're supposed to pledge that you will uphold the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin. The Madison City Council says you can add a sort of a protest to that if you object to Wisconsin's new constitutional ban on gay marriage and say that you support the Constitution, but hey, not that part of it. What do you think of that, Tony Palmieri?
Well, Bill O'Reilly on Fox News is very upset about it, so it's probably a very good thing from my mm-hmm. point of view. I think the people on the Madison Common Council are saying that they ought to be able to make a statement of conscience in their oath, and I applaud them for doing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, John Nichols in the Cap Times wrote a very good column the other day where he said, you know, it would have been nice if from 1787 to 1861, people elected to the Congress had said that they're pledged to take slavery out of the Constitution. So, you know, making a statement of conscience, that's as American as apple pie. I think they're doing something very patriotic.
Do you, Jim Miller?
Well, basically, you know, it's often been said Madison is 31 square miles outside, you know, outside of reality. Yeah. The state basically had a constitutional vote last November. Madison doesn't like the results. They don't think the rest of the state... you know, should be able to have an election and then follow what the rest of the state said that they want to happen in Wisconsin. If they don't like that constitutional amendment, does that mean people around the state don't have to follow other constitutional amendments? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, where do you draw the line here? Maybe Madison ought to come back and realize that they're living in a state, not a state of mind, but an actual state.
What about the Family Research Institute, which was behind getting this constitutional amendment passed, says it is researching a possible legal challenge to block the city from using this protest to the oath of office. Is it worth that, Jim Miller?
I don't think it is. But, I mean, you know, it seems to me that what you really had to be concerned about would be public officials who literally, like, a district attorney or an attorney general, who somehow give you the impression they're not going to basically uphold the laws of the state. I just think, again, it's one of these kind of goofy Madison issues that don't mean a whole lot and get too much media play.
All right. Anything further on this, Tony Palmieri?
No, I just think that it's a case of people exercising their conscience, which I think should always be praised, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. The prosecutor who led an investigation into the capital corruption in Madison says a bill to strengthen the oversight of ethics laws is severely flawed. Dane County District Attorney Brian Blanchard says the plan, as currently written, could weaken enforcement of public corruption cases in many ways. This legislation it'll combine the State Ethics Board and the State Elections Board and create a government accountability office that would go after corruption in the state capitol. Apparently not everybody is entirely happy with this legislation. Do you have any thoughts on this, Jim Miller?
Yeah, I do, actually. Mm-hmm. For the last several years, when we've polled on ethics in the state, I mean, overwhelmingly people in this around Wisconsin, outside of Madison, don't have a whole lot of confidence in the ethics of people, not only in the legislature or the governor, but bureaucrats. And what we're seeing now is like a dance of special interests in Madison on what legislation should look like. The Blanchard, District Attorney of Madison's charges on this go back to something, whether you like it or not, there's a sense of among Republican legislators that they were treated harshly by Blanchard compared to the Democrats in the scandal cases. And I think, candidly, what they're basically saying is they don't want to give Blanchard any more political opportunities. Even though he is the district attorney in Madison, they don't think they can get a fair shake with Blanchard if there's the problems in the future.
I mean, that's sad. Blanchard was as tough with Democrats as he was with Republicans. And, you know, Brian Blanchard is one of the heroes of the, you know, fighting the corruption down there over the last 5 or 6 years. I think his opposition to this legislation needs to be listened to very, very, very closely. And there are other problems with this legislation. I mean, it creates penalties for leaking investigations, I mean, which can make it difficult for people to whistleblow. So I hope the Senate and the Assembly are listening to people like Blanchard. I mean, he was one of the few people that really fought very hard to end corruption in our state legislature. And so when he makes a complaint about legislation, it should be listened to very closely.
Yeah. And I guess
E. Michael McCann is making the similar criticisms, and McCann was also very good in prosecuting some of the, you know, the crooks, and so we ought to listen to him too.
They're both Democrats, and I think what the Republicans are saying is they don't want to turn this into necessarily a political football. But I might also add, it's not just the legislature; the governor was involved in shaping this. I have one other comment on this. From the point of view of people who are in the legislature, and probably including the governor, one of the complaints that they may have not said publicly, but they certainly feel privately, is that in Wisconsin, the rules of the game were changed, and that some of the prosecutions were for offenses, which candidly were against the law, but have been going on for years. And I think one of the protections incumbents want now is to make sure the prosecutors can't change the rules of the game.
Yeah. We had a caller, and Tony Palmieri, I'm sure you've heard about this, given that you live very near the 8th Congressional District. The caller didn't hold on, but wanted both of you to comment on the controversy that Congressman Steve Kagan is apparently facing, where some think that he was rude to Karl Rove and to President Bush, and he called Laura Bush Barbara Bush, and whether or not he's not acting very congressional-like in Washington. Tony Palmieri, what do you know about this?
Steve Kagan made a couple of very ill-advised remarks to a peace group. It got reported in fact, the paper that I write for, the Valley Scene. The state media jumped on it, basically trying to make it look like Kagan is either a bore or a liar. And, you know, what Mr. Kagan needs to realize is that the district he got elected in, the 8th Congressional District, is split 50-50. And he should have known that the Republicans are going to jump on anything he does over the next 2 years. And so he gave them a little rope, and he needs to get his act together and you know, be a statesman, because the last Democrat that was in that district, Jay Johnson, lasted one term, and it was something similar. The Republicans stayed on him continuously for 2 years. So Kagan, you know, does not need to give his opponents any ammunition, and that's what he did in this case, sadly, just by saying something stupid.
Yeah, one of the comments was, thanks for coming to my district, Rove and President Bush, because that's why I won. Is that so bad?
Yeah, the problem is he then wouldn't confirm that he actually said what he was quoted as saying. And it was a public relations nightmare for him, and he was made, again, to look like either he was lying or looking like just the total bore. And he made himself look very bad. And again, if you're in a safe district, that's one thing. But when you're in a district that has been very competitive over the years, you need to know, as Steve Kagan needs to know, anything he says and does is going to be micromanaged for 2 years. Yeah. So he should not give his opponents any weapons over something stupid like this. And he did it. Now, hopefully he'll be more guarded with his remarks in the next 2 years.
Yeah. Jim Miller?
Well, I believe there is a term for his actions. I believe it's called wacko. The reality is, Kagan, he's already set himself up for the next 2 years. He's not going to walk away from what he just did. It's not even bizarre. Apparently, the original story, which he later said didn't happen, you got to wonder what this guy's been doing for the last year, besides getting elected. I understand that. But he's not going to have Bush next time around. And, I mean, I'm sure that there's going to be a long list of Republicans who would love to run against this guy, because he's going to have one of the most vulnerable incumbent districts in the country. What he did was about as bizarre a piece of behavior as you're going to see.
I think voters in the 8th Congressional District are going to be much more concerned with the way he votes.
Yeah.
And during his campaign, he indicated strongly he's a vote for health care reform. He's a vote against the war, and I think the people in the 8th Congressional District are ultimately going to be much more concerned with what he does with his votes than some stupid comment he made in front of a group.
Tony, you know as well as I do that can be true if you were in a safe district, but when you're in a 50-50 district and you're being painted nationally as the wackiest guy in Congress, it's not helpful.
But, Jim, I'm sure you'd agree with me. If Steve Kagan is, in fact, wacky, he's not the only one out of 435.
Yeah, but he's going to be the only one running in that district.
Well, all right, we'll go to, I'm not sure how wacky this is. The three candidates for Wisconsin Supreme Court had a forum this week in Madison. Civil Attorney Linda Clifford rebuffed charges by one of her opponents, Washington County Circuit Court Judge Annette Ziegler, that she would be a liberal activist. And it went back and forth. It was a little... I guess nastier than people expected it to be. What are your thoughts, or what can you tell us about this race for State Supreme Court, Jim Miller?
First of all, it's actually going to be rather important. I mean, there is a sense of certainly people who are conservative that the Supreme Court's become very liberal in Wisconsin, and this seat will be very, very important. Joy, I'm sort of amused at what you just said about a little bit more negative. After what we saw last November, I mean, these people have kid gloves on.
Mm-hmm.
I think, candidly, they have every right to talk about judicial philosophy and whether they're going to be a liberal activist, conservative. We never hear this with our judges, and I think it's something that's good for people to have some sense of what the politics are and what the leanings are of people running for the Supreme Court, because it's going to be a very important election.
Well, judge debates are usually so pointless because they always have this out that, oh, I can't talk about that. It might come before me. So to see a little bit of clash in a Supreme Court candidate debate is probably a good thing. And, I didn't follow that debate particularly closely, but if they are talking about judicial philosophy, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, the voters need to know, are you going to get, a Scalito on that court? Or are you going to get someone more progressive?
Yeah. So, Jim Miller is. It's generally thought that Linda Clifford, the Madison civil attorney, is the liberal candidate, and that Judge Annette Ziegler is the conservative candidate.
I think that's probably I think that's a fair comment on this on the race. But I mean, I want to get into something why this becomes even more important. I mean, we're going to probably see some issues like the constitutional amendment on gay marriage come before the court. And I mean, you know, we're going to have a situation in the state where the Supreme Court may begin to rewrite legislation. So I mean, I think it's a very important election. I think people should be paying very close attention to what happens in that race.
And I
agree with Tony. I mean, judges for too long have been able to not say anything about what they actually think. I don't think we need that. Because after all, it is an election. We're not talking now about a bunch of lawyers choosing who's going to be on the court.
And I don't mean to leave out criminal defense attorney Joseph Summers of Oregon is another, is the third candidate. There will be a primary, but the conventional wisdom is that Linda Clifford, who is backed by some former governors like Governor Earle, and Annette Ziegler, whose campaign is being run by Mark Green's former campaign manager, those would be the two that are likely to survive the primary, Jim Miller?
Yeah, and candidly, I mean, I'm not trying to be cute about this. How many people in the state know who those two are?
Yeah. Well, that's why we're talking about it here on the Weekend
Review. No, I understand that, but I'm saying, you know, very few people in the state have any idea when people run statewide for the Supreme Court, who they are or what their views are.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, Tony and I are agreeing on this. I think that's got to end. I mean, this election in the state Supreme Court will play a bigger and bigger role on people's lives in Wisconsin over the next decade. I mean, you're not just the Gay Rights Amendment. You're also going to see conversations, I suspect, that end up in the courts, how we fund education. So they're going to basically make some major decisions. And which direction the court goes will be very important to the state's future.
You know, we only have less than a minute here or so to go, but what do you want to hear, Tony Palmieri, in about 30 seconds, what do you want to hear President Bush say in the State of the Union address that he's going to be giving next Tuesday?
I'd like to hear him say that he's been wrong on Iraq and that he will begin the process of a redeployment or withdrawal, but he's not going to say that. Absent that, I hope he lays out some kind of plan for some meaningful reform of health care in this country. I don't expect that either. We didn't get a chance to talk about that this hour, unfortunately, but there's some interesting things going on at the state level.
Yeah, and we'll try to do that in a future one. Jim Miller, what do you want to hear with President Bush say in
the
state?
I actually would like to hear him say something. I mean, I understand everybody wants to hear him say stuff on Iraq, but I think it'd be very interesting to have him say what he's willing and where he thinks he can go with Congress to get something done domestically, since we haven't seen too much happen in the last 4 years, and which is one of the reasons why the Republican Congress got finished very badly in the last election. It would be very nice to see some things happening over the next 2 years where a Democratic Congress and a Republican president can come together in the national best interest.
Yeah, Jim Miller, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Joy.
And Tony Palmieri, thank you, too.
Thank you, Joy.
Jim Miller, president of the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, Tony Palmieri, associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh. Thanks to both of them for being our guests on This Week in Review. And thanks to Leo Duran for producing it. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.